The Senate Finance Committee will come to order. Today is April 2nd. We do not yet have a quorum, but we will start hearing the bill. We have up first, well, it looks like Senator Olson has both, but we have up first Senate File 2482, the Education Finance Bill.
Can I see if this thing works in here?
Sure.
I don't want to miss a word any of you say.
Can you hear me? Is it working for you, Senator Olson?
No, just a second. I know this one is. Okay, now.
How's it working now? Can you hear this? Do we have technical difficulties whatever that is?
There it is.
All right. I just needed to keep talking so she could see if it was working.
That's right.
Is that hotter?
In case I give up.
Welcome to the table, Senator Olson. Senate File 2482, the Education Finance. I guess we'll call it a minibus.
Instead of an omnibus. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Where?
A6 amendment.
A6?
Yeah, that's the original. I can help you engross the differences if you need to. There you go.
Okay. Very good. Thank you. Senate File 2482 is introduced as for our had the provisions that the governor's and department recommended for some changes to some actions that we took last year. One of those had to do with the early graduation scholarship. You know, when a student had completed, had graduated, it was a scholarship for being able to go on to to higher education, or actually it wasn't really limited in how they would use it. And there was a need to tighten up the provisions in it, and they did. We did agree. Had some compromise with the department to limit it to Minnesota institutions as it was introduced here, but and also some limitation on its use. If you had it going on forever, in other words, you had that pot of money and you could use it like 20 years from now, it's very hard to account for what the implications of it are. So there are some time limits that were added to it as well. The other provisions were some need for tinkering with the by the way, that applied to the military service award program as well. And they're not the department recommended not transferring that revenue for use for all day kindergarten and pre kindergarten. The other provision that we had was also to deal with, I think that was in this bill. Maybe we added it later. Yes, it is in here. Was some changes to the literacy incentive aid revenue and how it's calculated. It was calculated kind of on a building level based on the number of third grade the reading at proficient levels, and then also in the growth, if they had more than a year of growth. It was a combination of those two provisions that calculated the literacy incentive aid. And that was adjusted to the taking the actual numbers of the students and applying it to a limited block, because schools have K-8, some had K-6, some had K-4, and so if you took that building level, you were unfairly distributing it. But having said that, the amendment A-6, I believe you have in your packets, is not only including provisions dealing with those issues, but also a number of others, I think all of which have passed through the committee process in the Senate and in some cases have passed on the floor, or else they are on general orders right now. And I don't know if I – have we got a
– summary?
Was there a summary?
What was a summary in your
yes, paper? Yes, there is a summary that, in our packet.
We could follow through. I know I had one that it also – here we go. Here's what I'm looking for. Excuse me for – lots of red marks on here because I can walk you through that and indicate what whose bills they were. The first one – in Article 1, Section 1, is from Senator Wieger's bill, which was the department policy bill. So we've incorporated provisions from the department's policy bill in here as well, as is Section 2, 3, 4. These are assessment-related issues. Determining the residence and transportation of the homeless, number of issues to this effect. And the 2482 is incorporated here in terms of early graduation in Section 4 and 5, and on through Section 6. And then on Section 7, the timing of this eliminates language relative to alternative teacher compensation aid entitlement allocated to charter schools, and it changes the base year for charter school enrollment. That is in Senator Wieger's bill, as is some alternative attendance, continued enrollment for homeless students. And then in number 10, the career and technical education is Senate File 51, the provisions that we had for students being able to take a course, a career technical course. And at the 10th grade level, we eliminated you, some of you who are in education, remember that we did change that from a 9th grade to a 10th grade level.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you. I don't know if you want to wait till she's done and I can ask
no,
a question.
That's fine.
Okay, real quickly, sections. The homeless section, Section 9, I'm questioning here, it refers to a homeless student and then supplying transportation from the residence or the residence of the homeless person. Can you explain that to me?
Senator Olson.
Let's see. Well, Section 9, it just allows if the parent or guardian has moved to another district, they can continue to enroll in the one that they were in. I think it's an effort to allow some continuity of the student instead of just having to jump from one school to the next.
Mr. Chair and members, for the record, Eric Nauman, the Office of Senate Counsel, Research and Fiscal Analysis. Senator Ingebrigtsen, there's a number of sections in Article 1 that were recommended from the department in their policy bill associated with the change of the determination of where a homeless student is counted as a resident pupil. The section that you flagged, it conforms the continued enrollment for a homeless student when a parent or guardian moves to another district. So essentially, if you are the child of a homeless person and you move from another district, the department's global policy that they're recommending and is in this amendment is that student will be allowed to continue enrolling in the district where they previously were and be counted as resident for that purpose. In K-12 finance, it's always an issue of where a student is counted as a resident student versus where a student is counted as served for the purposes of determining how the dollars flow.
Thank you.
So there's some consistency statutes that are being adopted or recommended here.
And I think from a policy, it's trying to support that stability for the student. But from a fiscal standpoint, it's making clear where the money goes.
Right. Thank you.
All right. Senator Olson.
And let's see. We are.
He was Section 9 that he asked about. If you had done the career and tech, which was Section 10.
The career and tech. And we also have some language that was in my original 2201, that's the bill that's going to be coming up here right after this one, that we put in this bill. They have lifting some restrictions currently applying to post-secondary enrollment options. The elimination of the dual enrollment prohibition and dual credit, I should say. The statement that's been in there a long time, which allows post-secondary schools to advertise their accessibility to the provision of these programs to high school students, but prohibits them from saying that it might actually ultimately save them some money, the parents or their family, in terms of tuition. That prohibition is being recommended to be lifted. And also there's an elimination, I think, of the requirement, and that may be in one of the repealers as well, of young people in districts that are members of intermediate districts were prohibited from attending and using post-secondary enrollment options in the career and technical area. And we think it shouldn't have to be prohibited because of their being a member of an intermediate district. So we are now at Section 17. This is a Senator Vanderveer's provision that allows a charter school also to generate shared time revenue for a homeschool student. There are homeschool students that can go to any of their local district on a shared time basis, and the school district will get the revenue for the time that they spend and the courses that they for what courses they take, and this would allow a charter school to participate in that as well. I think the other provision was from 2482, as I said, that was the root bill that is introduced. Senator Vanderveer it's another provision of his bill relative to the charter schools and their application of that shared time provision. And let's see, requirements. Yeah, Mr. Nauman has explained Section 18 already. Here's the ad requirements as well from 2201. And from the 1531, that is the appropriation for payments for post-secondary enrollment options for 10th grade that might enroll in a career and technical class. There's some this is a new provision. Mr. Nauman could explain that, the appropriation adjustments, since that's not what wasn't in any of our other bills.
So, Mr. Chair and members, Section 21 of the A6 amendment provides appropriation adjustment authority to the K-12 bill from last year. There are some relatively minor in the global scheme of K-12 appropriations adjustments, and at the appropriate time we can walk you through the spreadsheet. But this authority provides the Department of Education authority to do the uppers and downers on the integration of the various appropriations affected by the statutory changes in this amendment.
Members, and for the record, we do now have a quorum.
And Section 24, or Section 22, is from Senator Wieger's bill, the department policy bill that makes a language change for to put English learner or a similar term throughout the application throughout the statute. And the repealer is the one I mentioned relative to affecting districts that are part of intermediate districts.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Bonoff.
Thank you. Senator Olson, there seems to be some confusion with regard to this repealer. Can the student's performance be counted twice for the purpose of student assessment and reporting? So I think that refers to, there was a Torres-Ray bill that talked about the charter school and the, I've been given the question. I don't recall the background, but I think it was when we wanted to be able to, Minneapolis, the District of Minneapolis wanted to be able to count a charter school in their area, their performance, especially, you know, when they were providing resources towards their overall numbers when it came to them looking at student performance. Do you recall that discussion?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Bonhoff, we did have a hearing on her bill.
Right.
And I think that was, we tabled it, but there's been some work on reconciling some of the challenges with it, and it's in here.
Okay.
So when I mention the next one with Senator Torres-Ray, I think you'll find that that some accommodation has been made, whether it's in that specific provision. I wasn't involved in those discussions.
Okay.
We will find that.
Okay, thank you.
So Article 2 in Education Excellence, Senator Chamberlain had a bill that was kind of getting rid of obsolete language and repealing some areas. We've got Senator Stumpf. Arrived just in time. His bill of Senate File 451 related to students that are in career tech being able to satisfactorily complete some science, particularly science credit. We've been continuing to work on that language, and but we've got a provision in here that when we get it done, we'll amend it to that. And also related to the graduation requirements on it. I think we've had much discussion in education about some of the things that we do that are deterrents to young people completing school when they don't fit into the academic structure mold. And if they can learn better in an applied way, we've put up some barriers to that, as well as caused some elimination of programs stuff like that in schools throughout the state. So we've been trying on a double-pronged effort, Senator Stumpf and I, to both get some recognition so that kids will stay in school and can learn in ways that are best suited to them, but also to enhance the revenue that schools do get so that they aren't being forced to eliminate some of these learning opportunities. So the Senate File 2402 is changing the date of the districts submitting their local reading assessments to the commissioner by a month, and that related to our last year's literacy planning approach that was part of our literacy package that went into law. Section 5 is part of Senator Chamberlain's eliminating some unnecessary language in the program structure of the training programs for teachers. Section 6 in the statewide testing is from Senator Wieger's bill relating to the timing of tests, of taking the basic skills and retests. In allowing them to go forward after a certain obligations are met there. Senator Hahn in 2088 has changes the date for giving teachers notice of their potential layoff, and it's delaying that to July 1st instead of June 1st. Senator Thompson's bill, Senate File 577, is reflected in Section 8 with the amended language that I think was satisfactory to virtually everybody about the limitation on use of school resources for essentially promoting elections or other political purposes. The Section 9 is site decision-making, the individualized learning. This is the same as the bill that we are going to be hearing, and I think we will probably wait until we take up that bill on its own to have the people testify here as to what our intent is in allowing districts an option of establishing an individualized learning school. It is that has been adapted since our early efforts in working together with the House staff in using some existing little used existing language in site-based decision making as the core foundation for implementing this program. And Senator Nelson's Section 10 is from Senator Nelson's bill on the annual principal evaluation, and reinserts the 35% of the evaluation needing to be based on student academic growth. And I think there's two sides to the issue, but I think the belief is that while the instruction and the teachers are, key to improving student achievement, the effectiveness and the ability to get there often is very much affected by the quality of the administrative leadership and the instructional leadership from the principal. And so this doesn't mean how much growth, but that 35% of their total evaluation should reflect that their impact on student learning. Senator Wieger's bill again on Section 11 on transportation, and that's again the relating to the, I think these, this involves post-secondary enrollment options, transportation as well. Post-secondary, I'm kind of reading things backwards here. It's kind of what shape my head is into this morning. So okay. Senator Han's bill, 2113, is section 12 and 13. Part of that was in Senator Wieger's bill as well, relating to the authorizers that again change. That's the authorizer is the one that. Wait a minute. How is it here? Okay, it's allowing the authorizer to make the decision rather than limiting it to one that has chartered multiple schools to be able to withdraw as an authorizer. And then the Section 13 is more directions that clarifying the role of the authorizer in the publishing and maintaining information for the public. Senator Han's bill is reflected in the charter contract on Section 14 and some of the dispute resolution. There's been a need for some clarification there as to the role of the authorizer in making some of these determinations rather than the role of the commissioner, and just trying to clarify that. Because when we passed the new authorizer legislation that a couple of years ago, that intent was to strengthen their role and their responsibility in oversight of the schools that they authorized. Section 15 is a bill by Senator Harrington that allows a charter school where 70% or more of its enrolled students are eligible for the graduation incentives to be deemed as a area learning center for the purpose of evaluation and school academic performance. And we had some powerful testimony from students in some of these alternative schools that may have a hard time demonstrating their prowess on some of the standardized tests or the MCAs, but have actually their lives have turned around and are being very successful in developing the skills. One of them is this, I forget, was it recording arts? Mm-hmm. school that's here. That in I've talked with a couple of them that were ready to graduate, a couple of the students, and it's just it's phenomenal what they are doing. And companies are contracting with them to produce you know, videos and things for media It's incredible. So they need some flexibility because they're keeping these kids on track rather than going the wrong way with their lives. And for most of them have been on that negative track. So that one we have put in place, and that was very strongly supported by members of the committee. Senator Hand's bill comes back to the employment matters on the with the charter schools. That's Section 16. And Section 17 is conforms the length of the charter school to the school year for traditional public schools. That was in Senator Wieger's bill, the department's policy bill. And Section 19, review and comment. I think there's, if you still have the same one that I have, there's a couple typos. There's prohibits an authorizer from assessing a fee for any required services except as provided in this subdivision, and that is that was from Senator Hand's bill, as is the next one relating to affiliated nonprofit building corporations. It's a clarification language, and that's in Senator Wieger's bill as well. And Section 21 is from a Senator Hand bill on the causes for termination of a charter school contract. Same provisions in both bills, Wieger's and Hand's in Section 22. 23 is, we are getting to the what you were talking about, Senator Manoff, the collaboration between the charter school and the school district. And this is allowing, it's a little bit different relationship between a charter school and the school district, and they enter into a two-year renewable agreement to collaborate to enhance student achievement. And it's the provisions for making that work. There was some consternation on part of some if it was setting up a whole new elaborate structure, but I think they work things through here to see that this will work on to the benefit of the goal of particularly Minneapolis of wanting to help close that achievement gap and making good use of the charter school efforts as well. And as you may have noted, I think this also is in support of Minneapolis as working to replicate now some of the very successful programs that have been just off the charts in terms of their growth and proficiency. And I've often wondered, they've been doing so well, why aren't they replicated? This is building a bridge to making that happen. And Section 24 is Senator Stumpf's 451, that career and tech levy. We're adjusting the cap on that. That what we're able to do is going to depend on if what kind of levy target we are allowed, and hopefully somewhere along the way things won't blow up and we will have a chance to make some continued investment. We're able to do it for just 1 year from last year's bill, but hopefully we'll be able to continue that. And the Section 25 and 26 are the adjustments for the formula for the literacy proficiency and growth aid that I mentioned to you that were in the underlying bill. And to Senator Nino, provision to lease building or land for the St. Croix Education District, and a lease purchase agreement is included here. And the Senator Burbeck, student organizations, we've corrected. That is from Senator Wieger's bill, correcting some of the acronyms for the Career Tech student organizations that was connected with the appropriation last year. And we've got some of the lease levy. There's a couple of districts, both Faribault and Wayzata, that were requesting to lease administrative space rather than to use. They needed the instructional space, and it was more costly to construct new instructional space and that was adequate than it is to take over the administrative space that was occupying some of these buildings and allow allow them to lease for that. And I believe that that is a that does not have a levy impact. So those two, both the Faribault and Wayzata, are included in that allowance. And that was, I think Senator Perry had one and Senator Bonhoff was carrying the other one. And Senator Chamberlain is in Section 30, some of the repealers that are out of date and unused provisions in statute. And the Article 3 is special education. In other programs, the sections 1, 2, and 3 are again from the department's technical bill or policy bill prescribing how trying to get some uniform billing and clarifying some definitions for that are a basis for approval of programs. The Senator Ortman's school district, we've included in here the her provision that the school district elections related to bonding be held on the general election day. We have not included anything relative to limiting, as there was a proposal in the House. I don't think that was even introduced in the Senate, that would make it only on even year elections. So that should not. Hopefully, that won't make people nervous. That does provide a bit of levy use that could be used other places in the bill if that in fact provision were to survive. And Senator Bonhoff, the early childhood education scholarships, and that was the provision that we had on the. On the early literacy home visiting programs, the parent-child home program that has been extremely successful and has been evidence-based, documented as such, to designate $250,000 of the $4 million that was appropriated last year in the metro area for this some expansion of this program. And if you have any more questions about that, I can handle that part and.
Make sure you mention this repealer. That's the repealer, 475-53.
Oh, okay. The repealer on Section 6 is from Senator Senjum, and Mr. Nauman, let you explain that. It lifts the limit based on districts that have that go outside of a city boundaries, isn't it particularly for cities in the first class, or did we end up lifting it for everybody?
Mr. Chair and members, as part of the evolution of the Rochester School District becoming a part of the city of the first class, we found a statute that had none of us were able to fully track back its original history. It sets a separate overall bonding limit for a school district that has physical territory that's part of a city of the first class. And then through some exhaustive discussions, the committee is recommending its repeal. It's fairly standard that when Minneapolis and St. Paul come to the DIS, need some bonding authority, that statute is regularly not withstood. So it was felt that the committee could safely repeal it, and I think the department is okay with that provision.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, if I've sufficiently confused you with some of my attempted explanations, feel free to ask any questions because I've got the experts on either side of me. Ms. Butler for the and Mr. Nauman, but why don't we start with Mr. Nauman, who can highlight the provisions that are particularly pertinent to the Finance Committee.
So Mr. Chair and members, with your permission, I'd like to turn to the spreadsheet. It's a fairly slimmed down K-12 spreadsheet relative to what we usually bring to this committee. I think the committee administrator was pleased that we kept it to one page, or at least the aid portion to the one page. Members, I'll note that where relevant, this spreadsheet assumes a 70.2, 29.8% shift, which is the shift that was included in House File 2038. the signed conference report. Members, this spreadsheet is organized by bill. Those items that were included in the A6 amendment and their original bill that had a fiscal impact. So, for example, on the very first one, Senate File 2038, was Senator Vandeveer's shared time provision. That had a slight tail effect of $81,000. Then Senate File 1531 has a number of effects. This is Senator Olson's PSEO bill. When an expansion of PSEO is made, you're actually reducing pupil ADMs on the general ed side for school districts, and then you're creating some expanded authority for PSEO payments to institutions of higher education, and you're also saving levy, so that creates a property tax recognition shift effect. So all three of those together, the next three lines work together. Senate File 2482 includes some adjustments to the literacy incentive aid that Senator Olson mentioned before. The allowance is changing from an $85 per kid allowance multiplied times all the kids at the site to a $530 allowance multiplied times either the third or fourth grade pupils, depending if you're talking about growth incentive or the proficiency incentive portion. The early graduation incentive adjustments is on line 2482. Both the previous line and this one are shifted. So these numbers are slightly different than the governor's original recommendation, but for the fact that the shift is different. Senator Perry's levy change for administrative space on the lease levy carried a $2,000 levy savings, so thus a $1,000 property tax recognition shift adjustment. Senator Bonhoff's bill was kind, and it didn't make any changes in that respect, so we didn't have to make that sort of accounting adjustment. Senator Nino's bill carries a slight levy increase, so it carries a slight levy adjustment on the property tax recognition side, and the same would apply for the TIES levy. And that would be reflected on.
Missed that, yeah.
Yes. Nope, it happens. then Senate File 1531, with fewer pupils to count, you also have an adjustment on the overall cap for both the regular special ed calculation and the excess cost calculation. Senator Ortman's bill, we'll see when we flip the page, has some levy savings. But it also saves a little bit on the debt service equalization calculation in fiscal year 15. So in total, the bill saves in the current biennium $1.2 million for fiscal year 12-13, and the tail is a savings of 2.6. So, Mr. Chair and members, I understand this is not the tax committee, but I'll briefly go through the levies, just maybe do a quick bottom line. After highlighting two important changes, the cap that was established in last year's legislative session, actually in the special session, associated with the Korean technical levy is relieved a little bit, not fully completely reflecting Senator Stumpf's bill, but Senate File 2041 does allow a $3 million expansion in taxes payable 13 and taxes payable 2014. It expands by $6 million. Some of that levy relief to conform with an overall zero target, which is assumed in this amendment, is the result of Senate File 204071, which is the debt election on General Election Day. So because there is savings associated with that provision, it is largely channeled into the career and tech program. So that
Mr.
allows
Chair, excuse me.
Senator Bonhoff.
Mr. Nino, could you just explain why we've got a debt reduction as a result of the Ortman bill? I don't follow that yet.
Mr.
There's an assumption that there may be fewer of those elections that would pass that would demand debt service equalization.
Thank you.
Mr. Nelman, continue.
Mr. Chair and members, so that leaves you a total levy change of zero in both years. However, for accounting purposes, there are certain adjustments that we have talked about, the property tax recognition shift. So we show levies subject to the PTRS of 148.4 and 120.4, which generates 72.1 and 58.5 of total property tax recognition shift, which ties you back to the aid side of the sheet. So, Mr. Chair and members, if there are questions, I'd be happy to address those, but this is probably our simplest K-12 spreadsheet in a number of years.
Senator Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Nauman, despite your considerable efforts, I remain very confused on all of this. But it is not your fault. This supplemental budget assumes a 70-30 shift, and you know I could be wrong, but I don't think that's where we're at right now. Where do we get to the 70-30 shift that this fiscal note is using as an assumption?
Mr. Chair and Senator Nino, that is an excellent question. The way that we work the accounting on the Senate side, and the House is doing the same, is that we have a signed conference report for House File 2083. And you may recall that House File 2083 was the bill that was passed by both bodies. The Senate had a slightly different shift number that changed the shift by moving money out of the budget reserve and bought back more of the shift than the 64.3, which is assumed in the forecast. If that bill didn't exist, you'd be 100% right that this is spending too much money relative to the shift. We shouldn't be making that assumption. But because we have a signed conference report and both bodies have spoken that they want to go to 70.2, at least in a conference committee, then we want to reflect this bill as it moves forward, assuming that shift level. Now, if the conference report were to be recommitted to the conference committee or voted down, for example, we would quickly do some accounting and adjust these back to a 64.3, and the savings that you see on the grand total line would drop from 1.2 to about a million.
Senator
Newman. Thank you, Mr. Nauman. That does help. You know, included in this question would also be what the governor does. I mean, you know, if the governor disagrees, then we would have to go back. Isn't that correct?
Mr. Chair and Senator Newman, that's 100% right. It's sort of the challenge of how we do the accounting downstairs. If both bodies approved that conference report, for example, and the governor chose not to sign it and vetoed it, then we would quickly need to adjust this spreadsheet, and we would have a different spreadsheet for you quite
Thank
promptly.
Mr. Nauman. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other questions, members? I have one. Article 3, Section 4, this is the Ortman provision, I believe, regarding elections on general election day. And this is just specific to bonding, correct?
Mm-hmm. Because we do have that provision for operating referendum now. We've had that for many years.
And that was
years.
My question. Were they asynchronous currently, or would they be out of sync going forward? But it's
no, they would be brought into sync.
Okay.
And some believe that there's some justification for having the bonding more free-floating, but there's arguments, for it as well. So,
Senator Bonham.
Mr. Chair, I have the A7 amendment.
Before that, maybe we should take action on the A6 amendment.
Very good.
I would suggest if you'd like to proceed that way, Senator Bonham.
I would move the A6 amendment to Senate File 2482.
Senator Olson has moved the A6 amendment. She's given us the thorough overview. Are there any further questions? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say no. The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Now I believe Senator Bonhoff has a motion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Olson, this amendment is with regard to the shift as it applies to charter schools who are delivering only special ed services. So in this particular case, we passed a law last session that was brought forward to us by the Lionsgate School, who is in the, I believe, Brooklyn Center area. It's up right by Maple Grove. They serve only students with autism. And so all of their payments are paid out of their cash flow. They have to pay for direct services as they happen. And so we made a calculation last session that we said if you are serving fewer than 150 students and you're completely special ed, you will not be subject to the shift. You'll still get your monies on a 90-10 basis. And then we learned that the 150 was actually too small. So this amendment just adjusts what we did last session and changes the 150 to 200.
And in current law, Mr. Central Chair, in current law, it says that special education services to at least 90% of the charter school's total enrollment. I think that was that little flexibility was allowed because of the provision in law that another family member has an option, and they might not fit that category and may attend that school. So if it just is allowing for that that flexibility in the current law. So she isn't quite accurate on the 100%,
right.
But it could be 100%.
Yeah, Mr. Chair and Senator Olson, now I do recall that now I'm looking at the language, and I remember it was to accommodate a family member. So thank you.
Senator Stump.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was just wondering, how many schools do you know? How many schools are participating in this?
Mr. Chair and Senator Stumpf, we believe it's two, and we don't believe that this would change that number.
Right. Thank you.
Any other questions? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A7 amendment, say aye.
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 Opposed, say no. Amendment is adopted. Motion carries. Amendment is adopted. Any further discussion from members? Don't see any. Is there anyone in the room that desires to speak to the bill as amended now? I see movement.
I'll be right behind you if you need me.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Roger Arnson. I represent the Elementary and Secondary Principal Associations. We have concerns about a few provisions in this bill. We want to bring the committee's attention to them. I've sat next to Senator Olson several times in other committees as well about this. But for the record, the PSEO changes in here, when you see the line in the spreadsheet that says $5,798,000, those numbers are going to come out of high schools. And that has to do with the expansion of the PSEO program into career and technical, adding 10th grade and adding the bottom half of 11th and 12th graders who don't qualify for PSEO. And the school principals in Minnesota think that's a bad idea. We oppose that. We oppose that in higher ed as well. And for the record, we oppose it here. In addition, as you roll down to the early graduation incentive fix, this came from a bill last year that created a scholarship program. The way funding for Minnesota schools works in the past was that if a student graduated early during the 12th grade year, the school continued to receive the aid for that student for the balance of the year. There was a program that was created last year that said we'd take that money away from schools and put them into a scholarship program for those students. There were some concerns with the department, as I understand it, on that program about how to compute that and how to track those scholarships because they hung out there for so long. So now the fix is to say that we will just simply not pay any aid when the students graduate early. And that's that number that you see there for early graduation incentive fix. So you know that money comes directly out of high school budgets. And as this goes down, that's going to be a significant change. It's not a lot of money, but in particular schools it's significant, and we oppose that as well. Two other things in the bill, obviously the 35% principal evaluation that Senator Nelson's bill is in here. That was hotly contested, and not to revisit that discussion, but we oppose that as well. And then finally, I do think we do have a concern about language in here that says higher ed institutions will now be able to solicit, recruit, and advertise for PSEO students based on their on the financial aid components of those programs. This bill has a massive expansion into a new list of providers for PSEO. Those are the 136A providers that are identified in the bill. It's for profits as well. And we think both that provision and then combining that with the new list of providers is a bad thing for high schools, and we oppose that. I think in the final analysis on this, we need to do some things for career and technical, and Senator Olson's drive in that direction. Obviously, the intent of that is good, but we do not agree that this is the method to go on that. Thank you, Madam Chair.
And Madam Chair, and
Senator Urbana.
Madam Chair, if I could just ask Mr. Nauman to step to the table and just clarify some of the statements made with regard to the aid side around the early scholarships.
Mr. Chairman and members, I think that Mr. Aronson spoke to the early graduation incentive fix, and the savings recommended by the governor. And I think it might be helpful to clarify that the savings here is a result of putting some hooks or some corralling the mechanisms under which the payments are made. So these dollars, the last year's legislation, Mr. Aronson's comments I think would be accurate, but here it has to do with how much is actually going to be paid out and when.
So, Mr. Chair, Mr.
Nauman,
so you're saying that you don't feel as though we're taking money from the high schools using this?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Bonoff, I'm not sure I said that. What I suggested was that the spreadsheet here reflects savings relative to the amount that's being spent out, as opposed to the interaction between both the reduced dollars in the K-12 system and the payments. That was incorporated in last year's bill. In this particular piece of legislation, it's clarifying and how the dollars get spent out, and that clarification holds some savings.
Gotcha. And then just
Senator
follow
Bonner.
Madam Chair and Senator Olson, I thank you for bringing this bill forward. And I know that Mr. Aronson, those comments, many were very concerned, but I was pleased with the amount of work the committees did and the we spent, committee after committee after committee just to make sure that we did iron out concerns. And so I think that it should also be noted, along with those who are concerned, how much work went into this, and I thank you for that.
Thank you. And Madam Chair?
Senator Olson.
Let me make a couple more kind of clarifying comments on this. Remember that we deliver aid to the schools based on the time that they are actually serving those students. And when students do, like when they go for open enrollment, the aid follows them. If students that are homeschooled come in and take courses at shared time that we talked about earlier, the school gets additional aid. And the post-secondary enrollment options is another example that if for the amount of time that they go or leave from the school day for courses at the post-secondary institution, that money does follow. It is interesting that as we've kind of managed, maybe shortchanged the payments to the post-secondary institutions, they aren't getting quite as much as what the other reduction is. But that is the basis on which we do fund schools. So the idea that they lose money also means that they aren't serving those young people for those times. The point I would like to make on this relative to the effort that we've done both for post-secondary enrollment options as well as other career tech, we're trying to deliver some more money to schools to do it, because one of the things that came out from a department was what they call the Perkins Core Indicator, and it's fairly a recent measure of using the data that we have as to the impact of how young people fare on their graduation rate who are enrolled in a career tech program. And if they are enrolled for the equivalent of 200 hours, which is the equivalent of an hour a day for a year, the graduation rate for the young people in that category, and they've done it in one program, not chopping around, little bits and pieces here, but one program, is 97.12%, a 97% graduation rate. This is why we have been trying to make some efforts along this line. This is the first hard data that this kind of opportunity for students in our high schools does help improve graduation rates, because they've been going down, and they've been going down in a trajectory that is often related to their loss of opportunities to participate in programs of this nature. So we're trying to see if we can't stimulate that happening both within our schools, but not closing the door, because the merger and the greater separation between post-secondary and secondary has also had an impact of young people participating in their post-secondary schools, and that's why at an earlier time, if they at least got a chance to be introduced to the some career tech opportunities, we wouldn't have to look at some of the pictures that came out of the governor's job summit, where there's these great labs that need, you know, they need people that are trained, and yet they're not, the students aren't coming. And why aren't they coming? They either don't understand what the opportunities are or have been able to identify their skills in relation to it or had an opportunity to participate and start early with their training before we lose them altogether because they don't fit into the strict academic mold. So I will continue to champion these kinds of things, and I hope that our schools respond as they did to post-secondary enrollment options. By, in that case, increasing rigorous courses, access to advanced placement and other kinds of college in the schools to keep them in the schools, that's the kind of response. I'm not satisfied with the status quo because it isn't getting us where we need to go, and it's not in the interest of kids. So I would challenge our administrators to take another hard look at that as to why they're there and what they're doing. It isn't just to protect only that budget bottom line, but to be sure they're serving their young people adequately. And now the school board's folks have got have their chance.
Madam Chair.
Senator Stump.
Just thank you. just to kind of reinforce what Senator Olson just mentioned, last week I was visiting with some people from DTED, or Department of Trade and Economic Development, and they were saying that companies are finding such a hard time finding people to work in the areas of, you know, some of the basic skills such as machinists, welders. And he said there's a number of companies that are paying between $22 and $29 an hour for welders, which is unheard of. I mean, that's a lot of money. I mean, I can remember not that many years ago, it was like $12 to $14 an hour. And so I think the those opportunities for young people are not kind of poverty-type jobs. These are definitely middle-income jobs.
Thank you, Senator Stump. And Senator Olson, I'm glad you're leaving this mark on our education system, because I do think it is something that will be positive for the students in the future. And I know you've put a lot of time into this over your career here, and I think it will bring about some good results. And so I Senator Stump has always worked hard on this as well. And I do believe that you're right, as we challenge the high schools to knowing that the students might be able to leave to go to the tech schools, they'll start offering more of these programs again in their buildings, and it'll be a benefit to all the students. And so hopefully we'll see that result in the years to come.
Thank you.
Ms. Kelleher.
Hi, Madam Chairman. My name is Grace Kelleher, and I represent the Minnesota School Boards Association. And I was going to let my colleague, Kirk Schneider, when he's got some better comments. But I was on the school board 15 years ago, where we turned over the technical colleges to the MNSCU system. So originally, they were part of the K-12 system and really the area we worked hard on to provide these programs to kids. The legislature determined that they would become a part of MNSCU, and so communities were divided. I remember signing the document that turned it over, and it was pretty clear the legislative direction at that time was they will take over that kind of training and we'll focus on K-12. And it was a big deal. So I want to make it clear that school districts never, you know, did not plan on not offering these programs. They were part of the system, and we were just now becoming then focusing on academics. So the reason there's been such a lag, I think, in this area goes back to when we ripped the technical schools away from the K-12 system. So I wanted to let you know that we do care about it, and it is important to us. But it's hard to do when we had that kind of change happening around the state.
Well, Ms. Kelleher, we meet every year because we can correct our errors.
Madam Chair, and that, you know, there's some say there's no right decision. You got to make a decision and make it right. And I think we're having to work at trying to make that decision right by building some bridges, because we cut off the feeder system. Because it's they're having trouble getting enrollment at the post-secondary level. Duh. You know, where are they coming from? They need to come from young people who understand what those options and opportunities are and get started earlier.
Ms. Alzwanger?
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Janet.
Can we let the school board finish, if you don't mind?
Certainly.
You may go ahead.
Madam Chair, my name is Kirk Schein. I went on staff with the Minnesota School Boards Association, and I'm not going to plow over the issue of the PSEO. I think we've talked enough about that, but we have similar concerns that were voiced by the principals on some of those issues. But I think the big issue for us in this bill is the issue of the elections for bond referendums, moving it to an even year, not an even year, excuse me, to an annually, I should say. And so I think that we had discussion in committee about this, and Chair Olson was respectful and understands the balance of the arguments on this piece. But from a school district perspective, I think that we want to retain our local control in terms of defining the date on when we can hold those bond referendums or bond elections. I think for planning purposes, when you're talking about new construction pieces, either additions or new school buildings, you need to have flexibility, because whether we like it or not, we live in four seasons, in a state that has four seasons, and you have a short amount of time for construction. And so to require us to only do this annually, that in essence could put districts out 18 months on construction needs. And this is true in districts that have growing student populations. And so the other point is that we are in a competitive market in the K-12 system, in open enrollment, charter schools, private schools. And when we don't have the ability or the flexibility to meet the demands of the building needs, if you have a large student growth going on in your district and you need to add a building or a classroom, those parents may opt to go to other districts. And I think the other point is that construction bids only last so long. And so if we fail 1 year and then have to wait the next year, and then construction can't start until the spring, that puts us out, as I said, 18 months before we can construct again, or assuming that thing passes. And if it doesn't pass, then we got another 18 months to wait. So we would appreciate the local flexibility on this, allowing districts the opportunity to meet the needs of their citizens and their students by giving them the opportunity to set their election dates for bond referendums. Madam Chair.
Thank you. Any questions for our testifier? Otherwise, Ms. Alzwang.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Jan Alswager, Education Minnesota. And I would also like to make a couple statements about the post-secondary enrollment option. I believe one of the things that we could do to improve this idea of getting kids into the programs, as Senator Stumpf is talking about, is to provide more of those programs and the funding for those programs in our local school district. And I understand what Senator Olson is attempting to do is to provide more opportunities for students. But I'm going to share something from a little different sort of angle. You know, we are all empowered, or we are our responsibility is to make sure that our kids are safe and learn appropriately in the K-12 system, and we take that very seriously. However, in this provision, we are now expanding it not just to 11th and 12th graders, but 10th graders. So now we are going to have 10th graders, 15, 16-year-olds, go off-site to a greatly expanded set of providers for post-secondary institutions. And one thing to consider is that a few years ago, your wisdom was to require that all school employees had background checks. So now we're going to be sending 15, 16-year-old kids to locations where there is no requirement for background check. How do they get there? Do they take public transportation? It's a little bit different take on it, but I think it's something that we should consider and you should be aware of. Also, we are concerned about on page 21.3, there is the use of prohibitions on political activities by public school employees. And I'd like to share with you some thoughts. Current law already allows school boards to set policies however they want. There was a court case decided in the Lakeville School District where the court opinion was that the school board could make the policies as they saw fit. And it is working. There is local control now. What this language is a state mandate about how you should how you should have your policy, what it should look like, and some of the things that need to be included. We think that that goes farther than is necessary, and then specifically there, we think that there are some problems within it. On line 21.9, it would prohibit working on the candidate for elective office. But elective office is also even your union president, and it doesn't define what the elective office is. It could be someone who was going to represent the school community for the American Heart Association activity that they were involved in. I mean, if there's any kind of elective office, we think that that's a problem. In line 21.12, it says that the policy must define appropriate use and times for the use of all computers, et cetera. So now what we are doing is giving one body, the school board, the authority to decide what teachers or school employees can talk about. So, for instance, they could say the policy could be that, well, if you want to communicate on legislative activity that fits the school board's needs, that's fine. But if it fits the school employees' needs and what their desires are, that's not okay. So we think that it is not balanced. The author of this bill, Senator Thompson, stated that if a school employee received some sort of political email, that the school employee could read it, they just couldn't respond to it. And that just does not seem to make sense. The person couldn't even probably, well, they couldn't, if the school board, to make clear, if the school board implemented a policy similar to what was discussed in the previous version, because they certainly could, a school employee couldn't even forward that email to their home computer so that they could respond. You've had a bill that was just passed, the prone restraint law, just signed into law, I think, today. And as you know, school employees would have a keen interest on what that language looks like as a professional, and they should be able to respond to that. The school board now could say that that could not happen. And I also want to make sure that you are aware, people in this body send surveys to our school employees. One particular person that I can think of even sent a survey in October right before the election. I don't think that was just a legislative email. So I think that this is picking on one group of employees, the school employees, and trying to restrict their activities, and I think it's far-reaching. The current law actually does a nice job of allowing the school board to make those decisions. But this language is a mandate on what those decisions need to look like.
Are there any questions?
But the glasses should have given
away. Please identify yourself.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Matt Toburin with the SEIU. We represent public school support staff. And I just want to echo some of the comments by Ms. Alschwager on Article 2, Section 8, prohibiting political activities by public school employees. We have significant concerns with this language. However, I really want to be clear that we do not support using public resources for elections, and we're very explicit with our members on what they can and cannot be doing. There are Attorney General's opinion, legal cases that prove that you cannot be using public resources on elections. The problem with this language is that it's very vague, and it's unnecessary. And we're really concerned about what may or may not be caught up in the policies that are created. Local school boards already have the ability to create these policies, and in some districts they do or do not have these policies. The fear is that if this is mandated that every single school district has to now create a policy, we'll be all of a sudden creating problems in districts where they don't currently exist. So in districts where this is a problem or school boards or administration has or employees have some issue, these are always problems that can be addressed and be addressed at the local level. But mandating that every district go through this process, not only will we be sort of opening Pandora's box, but we're really concerned on what exactly those policies will or will not entail because they're not explicitly defined in this bill. And with that, I thank you for your time.
Any questions? Otherwise, we'll take our next testifier.
Madam Chair, members, my name's Jim Bartholomew with the Minnesota Business Partnership, and I'll be quick, but just wanted to highlight three items in the bill and would like to thank Senator Olson and the committee. We think they put together a fabulous bill And on PSEO in particular, that was first passed in 1985, and over 27 years, a number of things have changed. And we think the provisions that Senator Olson and the committee have put together are fabulous updates to the law, especially given the change in our economy. In the next 5 years, 70% of all jobs will require some post-secondary education. And the transitions that the PSEO changes in this bill will help create will benefit our students and our kids. And I think it's interesting to note in the Education Committee you had both the Gifted and Talented Association as well as the Alternative Programs Association, as well as the Partnership, Growth, and Justice, just a very broad coalition of folks in support of these changes because of their focus on the needs of the kids and trying to help serve them better. So the PSEO stuff in this very strong and a great update. On the 35% for principals evaluations, student achievement is the primary function for our schools, and it's important to align that goal with the evaluation of the school leadership. The language is relatively broad for local interpretation for how they want to define student and school achievement, but a 35% connection seems very appropriate. And then finally, we'd like to thank Senator Olson and the committee. There has been a lot of work on what's known as the District Charter School Collaborative Language. We do think this will help create some new incentives for districts and charter schools to work more closely together to share best practices. So I just wanted to say some nice things about the bill. we think it's been put together and it's very strong.
Thank you, Mr. Bartholomew. We are going to have to wrap up quickly, so if we could have our testifiers kind of focus on the fiscal impact more than the policy, that would be helpful. You may proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Valerie Dozeland, and I represent the Minnesota Association of School Business Officials. They're the school finance staff in our school districts. I just want to echo the School Boards Association's concerns. We share the concerns regarding the requirement to hold bond referendum elections only in November. We think that will put more restrictions on school districts' abilities to meet urgent capital needs. I just want to reiterate that a school district doesn't just decide to hold a bond referendum. It takes a lot of planning, a lot of working with architects and getting bids, and a lot of working with the department to get their proposals approved, as well as it has to provide numerous opportunities for the public to provide input before the bond referendum election is held. And putting this, again, just to reiterate, putting this in place may cause districts to lose out on good interest rates and delay projects, as Mr. Schneiderwin said, up to a year and a half. And I'm available for any questions if members have any questions. Thank you, and thank you, Senator Olson.
Thank you. Any questions? You may proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Scott Kronquist with the Association of Metropolitan School Districts. And first, I do want to say we do appreciate Senator Olson bringing this bill forward. There are a number of excellent provisions, but I do just want to draw attention to two, and actually there are two that have been mentioned already, but the early graduation scholarship proposal. We fully support expanding post-secondary options for our students, and our districts have been working on that for a number of years, whether it's expanding AP or IB courses or PSEO or college in the schools. We've seen tremendous progress, and we think that will continue. It's just the financing mechanism that troubles us. As you've already heard, when you pay for it by reducing the money to the school districts, they don't necessarily have the ability to reduce their expenditures by that same amount. Their budgets are set. Just because some students leave early, they are not going to be able to lay off teachers or reduce expenses correspondingly. So that is a problem. The other issue there is that you recall we used to be able to take that money and redirect it then to full-day kindergarten. And you all know that we are woefully behind in Minnesota in terms of offering full-day kindergarten to our students. So now we're losing another option of trying to expand full-day kindergarten. The other issue is the bond referendum. We do have serious concerns about the ability to only have a bond referendum on general election day. You've already heard about the construction schedule, And let me just give you one other example where we could lose out on opportunities. There are frequently, or I shouldn't say frequently, but from time to time, there are federal grants available that require a local match. Say that federal proposal comes out in December or January. A school district could potentially lose out on that opportunity if they could not conduct a local bond referendum in order to secure the local match to be eligible for that federal grant. So we would really urge you to continue to allow school districts that flexibility to hold a bond referendum on days other than general election day. Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Thank you, Mr. Cronquist. Any questions for him?
Madam Chair, I'm going to ask also that I'm not trying to bypass Mr. Lundell, but I would like to have Ted Coldery come up. The second bill on our agenda today is standalone of a provision that's also in this bill. And I think if we're running out of time, I'd like to get his testimony now so it's understood, and then we could probably just act on that bill to send it on alone, too, if you don't mind.
Thank you, Senator Olson. Yes, we are running out of time. A number of us have Rules Committee at 10:30.
What do you want me to do?
Well, you go ahead.
Madam Chair, Brad Lundell from Schools for Equity and Education. The nail's already on the board on this one. I'll just hit it one more time. We're very concerned about the election day bond requirement that's in the bill, and that's the only thing that I was going to speak on. So we are opposed to that provision in the bill for all the aforementioned reasons. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lundell.
Thanks. I mentioned earlier the individualized schools that is a provision in this bill, and it is the next bill on the agenda. And so just in case you were going to cut us off, I wanted to get to Mr. Coldery up here to get his word in on the fact that this proposal, which we've addressed the department's concerns, and I think we have a really great opportunity for having some innovative happenings in our schools, and I'd like to have Mr. Coldery address it.
Mr. Fogarty?
This had strong bipartisan support as well.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senator Olson. I had the privilege of testifying.
Could you identify yourself, please?
I'm sorry. I'm Ted Coldery. I'm an associate with the Center for Policy Studies, which is a nonprofit here, works on education questions and other issues in the public sector. I testified at both the House and Senate policy committees along with a teacher who's individualized his third-grade class of eighth-year-olds in White Bear Lake and with a student in a school in St. Paul who's been in an individualized program for many years. And let me say just a little word about the individualization idea. It is emphatically about achievement, and I suppose achievement also translates into finance and economics for the system. This is simply an enabling legislation, adds a purpose, in a sense, to the site management legislation that's been on the books for a number of years in Minnesota to test the idea of individualized learning in some form. Age grading has been a part of the American educational system for 100 to 150 years. It's been one of the most persistent features of the system. We just see little kids all the time. We ask them, what grade are you in? But there are responsible folks who are very convinced that it is a major contributor to academic failure in this country. I thought Mr. Pye from White Bear Lake was eloquent about this. He, in his testimony to both houses, he, after a year or so in teaching, he came in mid-career from a career in business. He found that the range among the 25, 30 students in his class, the range was from the level of attainment on math and math and language. It ranges from the 10th percentile and below to the 90th percentile and above. And it was clear to him that he simply had to individualize. He's been doing that on his own initiative and with his own money, and it has had very impressive results. Dave Heistad, who's been the evaluation and testing and research director in Minneapolis for many years, confirms that this range of variation is typical across the system. So this simply gives an opportunity and encouragement to the schools to come to their districts and propose to individualize for the students they have, finding ways to let those who need more time have more time and those who can go further to go further. It does need to be on a whole school business. It doesn't work on a single class or a single classroom in a school like Mr. Pye's. It was recommended strongly, and I think I'd say encouraged enthusiastically by the committees in both houses. And it will be an interesting and important experiment. Are there any questions? I'd do what I could to answer them, but if not, thank you very much.
And Madam Chair, there is no fiscal impact to it either. So.
Okay. We like to hear that in this committee. Are there any questions for Mr. Coldery? If not, are there any other comments or questions about the bill?
Madam Chair, members, Jim Grathwell, Minneapolis Public Schools. I just wanted to thank the Chair for including Section 23 of Article 2 in the bill. We think it's going to be this is the collaborative charter school language. We think it's going to be a strong incentive for school districts to partner with the charter sector for the success of all of our students.
So surprised you didn't.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Are there any other comments or questions? Or Senator Olson, do you have a motion?
I'd like to move that, what number are we, 2482, as amended, to be recommended to pass, and I believe it's ready to go to the floor. It does not have to go to taxes. We've inquired.
Okay, that's good. On Senator Jen Olson's motion, then, that Senate File 2482 be recommended to pass as amended and placed on general orders, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, nay. The motion does prevail. The bill will be placed on general orders.
Would you consider also passing the bill that we just heard about, the Senate File 2201 on individualized learning? That's a provision in the other one, but we'd like to send it on its way alone as well. And so, I would so move.
Is there any amendment, Senator Olson?
Oh, an amendment.
Is there an amendment? Sorry.
I believe it's the A6 amendment, and it takes it down to just what's remaining of things that you
right. Okay.
have not transferred out.
This is the same language as in the other bill, I believe. But it's, yes, it is. It isn't as you have the bill before you.
The amendment is in your folder,
okay.
The A6. It is about the individualized learning and instruction that we just heard about. Are there any questions?
Move that amendment.
So Senator Olson moves that Senate File 2201, as amended, be recommended to pass.
I think we have to move the amendment.
First. Oh, yes, I'm sorry. I'm in such a rush. On the A6 amendment, the motion has been made. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed, nay. The motion does prevail. The amendment is adopted. And then on the bill, Senator Olson moves that Senate File 2201, as amended, be recommended to pass and placed on general orders. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The motion does prevail. The bill will be placed on general orders.
Thank you very much, members.
And with that, members, the meeting is adjourned, and we will meet tomorrow morning as well.
Yep.
Meeting is adjourned.